everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me. This is an opportunity to have some wonderful conversations with the knowledge that allows us to be more empowered in our life. And isn't that what it's all about? It's really understanding more about our bodies, what we can do to support it, heal it, optimize our health, and be able to make those informed decisions. So thank you again for joining me today. I want to encourage everyone to go to my website, whatwomenmustknow.com, because I have some free special reports I give out, Understanding Our Hormones. I have lots of information that I send out throughout each week, and even going to my Facebook page is better because there I post on a daily basis, sometimes post lots of things on a daily basis. It's a great place to just keep you updated with articles, recipes, stories, some amazing products, whatever I may come across that I think is really relevant and want to share with you. So keep getting educated, keep getting empowered with truthful information, and you will just find your way towards better health and optimal well-being. And I just want to say something. I recently had the opportunity to do some ultrasound on my carotid artery. I was at a conference and they were offering that testing, that diagnostic test. So I thought, you know, it's probably a really good idea to see how the health of my carotid artery is doing. I don't think I ever had that tested. And I just got the results back this week, and it was really exciting because I had the carotid artery health of someone 20 years younger. Yay! So that was wonderful, and it just reinforces to me the value of taking care of oneself and being committed to addressing nutrition, bringing exercise, getting optimal supplementation. It all pays off, and I was really thrilled to see that everything I've been doing and committed to is actually being demonstrated in optimal health. So as I like to say, I'm getting younger and healthier as I get older, and that really is the journey for all of us. So speaking of getting younger and healthier for all of us, we're going to have a fascinating conversation exploring the wisdom and teachings of the women healers of the world and some practical knowledge that we can all apply into our life on a daily basis. And that is the name of a new book called Women Healers of the World, The Traditions, History, and Geography of Herbal Medicine, by a wonderful herbalist, Holly Bellabono, who directs the award-winning apothecary Vineyard Herbs, Teas, and Apothecary on Martha's Vineyard, and the Bellabono School of Herbal Medicine, where she trains and certifies community herbalists. She speaks around the world to audiences about natural health, herbal medicine, and women's empowerment. And her new book, Women Healers of the World, The Traditions, History, and Geography of Herbal Medicine, highlights the story and lives of 21 contemporary and 10 historic women from 20 countries whose work with plants is integral to the heritage of healing and could very well solve medical puzzles that conventional medicine can't. So it's my great pleasure to welcome Holly to the show today. Hello, Holly.
Hi, Cheryl. Thank you for having me.
Well, you're very welcome. And first of all, I want to congratulate you on this magnificent book. I mean, it's just filled with beautiful photos and recipes and the women that you've interviewed, and it's really an amazing creation. So I just want you to know I really appreciate all the work that went
Thank
into this.
You.
And I believe it has been a labor of love, hasn't it?
Oh, it sure has. It's been a fantastic labor of love, a seven-year labor, actually. It's taken me a long time to complete this project because it just grew and grew, and the women that I met were so amazing and so extraordinary, and I just kept wanting to meet more and more and share their stories and their plants and their cultures. It just became a very colorful celebration of all these women and their extraordinary work in the world. So it's definitely been a labor of love.
So tell us about yourself. How long have you been an herbalist?
Roughly 20 years. I started as a gardener how I got into it. I was in graduate school getting a master's degree in environmental policy, and to pay my way through, I joined a landscaping crew and started learning about cultivated plants and gardening with plants, and then quickly became aware and tuned with plants as food and even medicine, which was new to me. You know, growing up in the suburbs of Asheville, North Carolina, my parents were very mainstream medical type people. My dad was a pharmacist and my mom was a registered nurse, and it was very mainstream allopathic kind of medicine. Never in our wildest dreams would we have gone outside and picked some wild weeds and brought them in to eat or to use as medicine, you know. And so when I was in graduate school and I started learning about this, it was very eye-opening. And I started studying wildflowers and wild plants and their pharmacology and what they had to offer our bodies and our minds. And it became a very fascinating topic for me. And since then, you know, about 20 years later, I've really, my love for plants has just grown. And it has encompassed now my love for the people who, you know, other people who love those plants, which is why I wanted to write this book about the women who use these plants in their various traditions.
Did you actually travel around the world meeting many of these women?
I traveled a little bit. I didn't go to all the countries. I would have loved to. But I was able to go to Hawaii and meet with a Polynesian kahuna or healer there, Auntie Velma de la Pena, as well as a few other healers in the Polynesian tradition. And while I was there, I also met with a Taoist master, Dr. Lillian Chang. She runs an acupuncture clinic focusing on really ancient Taoist traditions. I also traveled to various conferences across the country to meet with these women when they were coming in, you know, from their international travels. So I was able to meet with a lot of them face-to-face and really get to know them really well. And then the few that I couldn't meet face-to-face, I interviewed on the phone, or a couple were by email, and a couple of them I had to use translators for. I interviewed a woman in Gabon, Africa. She's a shaman. She's actually one of the 13 indigenous grandmothers. Her name is Bernadette Rabineau, but she only speaks French, so I had translator help for her interview. So it was a fantastic journey to a number of different places to meet women from six continents.
I think that would have been such a blessing, actually, to have the opportunity to encounter these women in whatever way you did and learn from them and then share their wisdom in your book. And I know that encountering these amazing healers and shaman and wise women, that there were some very profound learnings that you must have received from the time you spent with them. So can you share some of those lessons that they shared with you about the power of healing, the tradition of herbal medicine, or just the power of nature?
Yeah, you know, it was fascinating being and talking with people from all over the world, because they're coming from 20 different cultures and countries with their own histories and traditions. And at the beginning, my goal was really to bring in people who had one similarity, which was that they worked with plants. That was kind of how the cohesion, the glue that I wanted for my book, was to celebrate these women who had some sort of botanical expertise and used plants in their healing. But I learned that there were really many more similarities with these women than I had expected, and some really extraordinary life lessons that really stuck with me. One was the idea of self-confidence that these healers expressed to me, especially the more indigenous healers, expressed to me that having self-confidence as a healer is the most important trait. Sometimes maybe in Western medicine, we think of compassion. You need to be compassionate, or you need to be a quick learner. You have to have a good memory. You have to be a good listener, bedside manner, you know, all these different characteristics we think of for nurses and doctors and healing practitioners. But these indigenous women actually told me something very different. They were saying confidence in yourself as a healer is the key trait. And they were coming at it from an interesting perspective. It wasn't confidence to the point of arrogance. It was confidence in the gifts that you've been given by the universe or by God or by spirit, confidence that you are worthy of those gifts and that you are capable of using them to the best benefit to help someone else. So, for instance, I spoke with Doña Enriqueta Contreras, who is a midwife out of Oaxaca, Mexico. She's a Zapotecan midwife. Phenomenal woman, very fierce, very strong woman. Does not smile easily. When I met with her, it was a very intense conversation. She has had a very rough life. But one of the things that she told me was, as a midwife, as a healer, she has learned that she has to have confidence in herself. She has to know that the herbs that she's giving a woman are going to help her. She has to know that the position that she puts a woman in during labor is going to help move the baby safely. And then if she doesn't have that confidence in herself, if a young person enters medicine without that confidence, she said they might as well get out of the camp, because it's key. Another healer that I spoke with in Hawaii said the same thing. She said, you're not a carpenter, you're not building a table, you're not building a house, you're not sitting at a desk doing a computer job, you're a healer. You're actually helping someone overcome disease and illness. You're working in life and death situations sometimes. And if you are, if you're not confident in your ability to help someone, you could actually cause more harm than good. And so it was a real eye-opening thought that, you can't take what you have for granted. You can't jump in hoping that what you have is correct. You can't enter a situation hoping that maybe somebody else has the answers and will do something for you. You know, it's a real empowering vision of self-confidence as accepting your gifts from God and moving forward to help others. That was a big one. That was really big. And on the flip side of that, interestingly enough, I spoke with one of the women I featured in my book is a Tibetan healer. She came from Tibet, and she studied all the native traditional Tibetan healing practices and now lives in North America, in Massachusetts, actually, running a Tibetan healing center. And she kind of had an opposite point of view. She said one of the things that she was taught in medical school in Tibet in her training to become a doctor was actually humility, being very humble, that you are the servant of the person that you're helping, that it wasn't so much a self-confidence thing as it was a humility thing. The same idea of taking your gifts from the universe that you've been given and using them for the betterment of others, but less an emphasis on self-confidence and more an emphasis on using your gifts in a service capacity. So that was very interesting.
Which would be a very Tibetan perception and perspective on life.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah. I was just going to say, you were asking me about lessons that I've learned.
Yes.
Something else that came through from a lot of the different women I spoke with was the benefit of being mentored by someone. A lot of the ladies that I interviewed were raised at the knee of a mother or a grandmother or an aunt who sheltered them and protected them and taught them about being a healer or about the plants and how to use plants and how to identify them and harvest them and how to care for someone who was sick. They really were given the benefit of a teacher, a one-on-one instructor from the very beginning, which was something interesting to me because I didn't have that experience. I was raised by a pharmacist and a nurse, and they would have loved for me to have gone into mainstream medicine, but for me to pursue herbalism was a little too far-fetched for them. They weren't quite sure what to think of that. And so I didn't have any sort of mentor. I wasn't in a community that fostered any kind of education for alternative health practices, and especially for using plants. And so it was really kind of something I had to forge out on my own and create. And so I made that happen for myself. I went and studied with different herbalists in my early 20s. I traveled. I and checked out all over Great Britain, different communes and healing centers. And I created and crafted this education for myself, but I didn't have a mentor. And a lot of the women that I spoke with did, and it was very meaningful for them. It made a huge difference in their in choosing their path. And so I think that's something important that I learned from, and that I encourage other women to do, is to find young women in your communities or in your profession and bring them in. You know, put them under your wing and teach them the tricks and the secrets that you've learned to help them get on their path, because we all need that help.
I've interviewed Susan Weed, and she has this granddaughter that she has been mentoring since this little girl has been born. And it's so fascinating. I get her regular emails, and you see this little girl growing up, and now she's like 4 or 5 or whatever, and she's teaching the classes and doing the tinctures. It's so adorable, but it's true. You know, what a gift that little girl has with her grandmother passing on that knowledge and wisdom.
Yeah.
And I know you have Susan Weed as one of the healers in your book. So, you know, I see that with her. So tell us about nature. Tell us about the power of the plants. What is it about nature and the plant kingdom that makes them such powerful healing medicines?
Oh, where to begin? Nature, it affects us in so many different ways. You know, physically, the pharmacology of the plants is something that's really fascinating to me. The chemistry, it's the basis of science. It's how a lot of people approach plants, as they know them on a chemical nature, because of their resins and tannins and glycosides and flavonoids and essential oils and alkaloids and really fun chemicals that do strange things to our bodies. That's one level. And then there's this whole other level that's very spiritual, that's very ethereal, and you can't pinpoint what's happening, but you know that something good is happening when you walk through a forest of green trees or you stand beside the ocean and you hear the waves. It's an entirely different sense of healing, but I think equally as profound. And I love to try to bring those two together, to blend the pharmacology with the spirituality. I think that's the true essence of herbal heritage. I think being an herbalist, people really, really do try. You know, most herbalists see that. They see the breadth of healing offered by nature, especially plants, and the physical healing, the emotional healing, the spiritual, the mental. There are a lot of plants that affect your memory and can strengthen your mental thinking processes. So many different levels on which we can appreciate plants, and I think it's gone back farther than humans can even think. Obviously, plants have been part of our rituals and ceremonies. Many archaeological sites prove that. It's been fantastic reading about all the new discoveries and archaeology and how plants were central to these ancient rituals and ceremonies involving the cycle of life and death. But closer to home, it's really meaningful to see that the plant right outside your back door can help you in so many ways, and it's easy and it's accessible and it's fun. That's part of why I love teaching about using plants, is because it's a lot of fun. Hands-on crafting is great, and it's something that you can really see an immediate difference in. I think that's part of the allure and the charm of herbal medicine, is that it's quick in many ways. You can pull up a yarrow leaf or a plantain leaf and put it on a cut, and it stops bleeding, and you put it on an infected area on your skin and the infection goes away within a day. These things are quick, but there's also more of a relationship building process here for things like stinging nettle, which we can get into when we talk about recipes and practical ways to bring these plants into your kitchen. Stinging nettle is an herb that is really high in minerals and is very good for you, extremely good for you. And it takes a while to kind of get into your body to build up. So if you're drinking a tea of nettles every day for 3 months, then you'll really see the difference. So it's not something that's immediate. It's not a magic bullet. But it's a way to develop a relationship with that plant over time and see its value in that way.
You know, here's the question I wanted to ask, and maybe some of these women healers that you interviewed gave you some insight. How did we learn of the healing gifts of each plant? You know, all these plants grow in the same soil, but they mm-hmm. all have different properties. They've taken up different constituents of minerals, nutrients, and they have their own unique healing specialties, so to speak. But how did we first know about it? How did we learn about the healing powers of each of these many, many plants?
You know, I think there were two main processes, two main ways that that happened. One is experimenting, blindly or semi-blindly going out. People would try different berries, leaves, flowers, fruits, barks, and just try them and see what happened. It was very much an empirical sort of study. I think it led to the more scientific method of laboratory experimentation, but it's really just trying things out and observing. But I think more than that, across cultures, it was more listening to the plants themselves. It's more of a shamanic, intuitive understanding where you go out and you meditate with a plant and you listen to it. And more often than not, you'll hear something. And several of the women that I spoke with, you know, the way they learned about plants or the way their ancestors learned about plants was to ask the plant itself, what are you good for? And that's something that a lot of people today, I don't want to say lost, but we haven't lost it. We've just ignored it for a while. We've kind of put it aside as a possibility. And when you reawaken that and revisit that, it's a very wonderful kind of relationship, a connection with these plants, and you often find some really good information that seems to come from your own mind, and maybe it is, but I think, and these women in my book tend to reveal that it comes from a much greater source, you know, more of a universal source that is sharing this information.
Well, I've been watching some documentaries lately on the intelligence of plants and reading some articles. It's pretty powerful information to see the intelligence of plants, to see how their behavior, which we can't see because they do it much more slowly or it's underground and visible. But in this one documentary, they were doing all sorts of studies to see the intelligence of plants, how they act like mammals but just do it much more slowly. For instance, there are trees that prefer to nurture their seedlings as opposed to other seedlings from a similar tree but not the same gene pool, so to speak. I mean, they actually preferred their seedlings, like looking after their young. They, in this documentary, they were talking about nutrient-rich areas, just like animals graze longer in nutrient-rich areas. Well, when they looked at the growing roots of these plants and they put areas where there were more nutrients and other areas underground, then the roots would stop and graze and take on the nutrients and the minerals that were there much, you know, stayed there. They didn't move on. It was a fascinating, fascinating look at plants that actually changed my whole perception of plants. And when I
exactly, there's so much that we don't perceive that thanks to modern technology we're just now getting a glimpse at. But yeah, I mean, and some people, some skeptics may say, you know, that's the for the seedlings, that's chemical. The plant can somehow sense the chemical similarity in the seedlings. But, you know, there's so much more to it than that. And I think people are starting to open their minds to that reality that we don't know everything. And what we're beginning to learn shows us these connections in nature that we had no idea about that are just extraordinary. And I think plants is a great place for people to start looking at those connections because there's beauty, there's allure, there's chemistry, there's healing, there's history, there's this connection with women that's gone back for millennia. These people who have always been close to the land, you know, women have always been the gardeners and the farmers for their communities. It's kind of different in America today. We think of a farmer and we think of a man in overalls. But it hasn't always been like that. It's been a very feminine endeavor, working with the crops and the soil and the plants and harvesting food for the table. such a great heritage, and I love that people are opening up to this and experiencing it finally.
Can you talk a little bit about the law of signatures?
Just a little. I'm not an expert on that. The basis of it is that it's called the doctrine of signatures, that a plant will give you clues as to what it's good for based on its physical characteristics. So, for instance, lungwort is a little wildflower, and it has little leaves that are sort of shaped like a lung, and so people have always used that as a respiratory tonic. Or yellow dock is Rumex crispus, and its root is a bright yellow, and so people associated that with the liver, because when you have problems with the liver, it turns your skin yellow, as in jaundice. And so the doctrine of signatures says, you know, there are clues being put out by the plants for their use. It's another way of listening to them, appreciating their knowledge and their wisdom. It's symbolic, and it's an old doctrine. It reminds me, you know, it was put out alongside other what people would call more superstitious healing qualities or healing traits, like the Gaelic pharmacy. I profile Gaelic pharmacy in my book, which was full of what we call today superstitious medicine, but was really a very intuitive way of looking at nature and being very in touch with the world around them. So I think Doctrine of Signatures is kind of similar in that it's a way of expressing symbolism and imagery into healing.
Which seems to have a tremendous amount of validity.
Yeah, in many ways it does. Like I said, I'm no expert. I haven't really studied it, but it's one of the traditions that we can celebrate. Is another perspective, another way to look at and appreciate plants. And there are so many perspectives, and I think in many ways they're all right.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it's just another opportunity.
You are listening to What Women Must Know, and today we are exploring the world of herbal medicine. And my guest today is Holly Bellabono, who has written a fantastic book, a beautiful book called Women Healers of the World, The Traditions, History, and Geography of Herbal Medicine. And she is the owner and founder of an award-winning apothecary called Vineyard Herbs, Teas, and Apothecary on Martha's Vineyard. And she also has the Bellabono School of Herbal Medicine. She's sharing with us today the world of herbs and the healing power that comes from plants and nature. So, Holly, I'm looking forward to learning about some of the herbs that you have worked with or that are particularly beneficial for us, and particularly how we can incorporate some of these herbs and tinctures or whatever. I'm anxious to learn what you recommend and what are some of the things we can start receiving from herbs.
Great. There are so many ways to go about it, so many different different plants, obviously, and different ways to use those plants, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. But to start out, if you really want to, say you have a garden or you have some pots on your windowsill and you're growing a little lemon balm or some mint or some sage, it's so easy to use those, not just in cooking in the kitchen, which a lot of people are thankfully familiar with, but actually for medicine, for healing yourself, for a variety of conditions. And some of the easiest ways, definitely by far the easiest way, is to make a tea with some of these herbs. And a true tea is made with the Camellia sinensis plant, like black tea, which is caffeinated. And an herbal tea technically is called a tisane, or an infusion, or a standard brew. But I'll call it a tea just for clarity's sake. So to make an herbal tea, which is a water-based extract, and I'll get into extracts in a second, but a water-based extract is so good for your body because you're hydrating your body, you're giving yourself the vitamins and minerals that are extracted from the plants that you steep it in, and it's tasty. You know, they taste so good for the most part. So some of the herbs that make the best teas are lemon balm, which is in the mint family, grows really easily, grows in a little mound. and it puts out little flowers. But before the flowers come out, you can harvest the leaves, and they've got a lovely lemony aroma. And the best way to use it is, the best way is to dry it. If you can, spread out the stalks with the leaves on the stalks on a screen or a sheet in a shady but well-ventilated area. So the best places are in an attic with a window open or at the top of a stairwell. And let them dry until they get crispy, and then you strip the leaves off and you store them in a glass jar or a paper bag until you're ready to use them. And then you want to use 1 teaspoon of herbs per cup of boiling water. And if you're using fresh herbs, you can do that too, but you want to triple the amount. So you would use 3 teaspoons of fresh chopped leaf per cup of boiling water. And with lemon balm, you want to brew it or let it steep in that hot water for anywhere from 8 minutes to 12 or 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. So 8 to 15, depending on how strong you want it. The benefits of lemon balm are wonderful. Lemon balm, the Latin name is Melissa. It means bee, because bees love to come to its flowers. It is considered a nervine tonic, and a nervine tonic is simply an herb that nourishes your central nervous system, really nourishes your body, is very good for you, and is a safe herb that you can use long-term. So some herbs you can't, you know, there's a limit, there's a window where you can use them in your body, but then you need to have a break, or they're too bitter and they're not nourishing. Lemon balm is one of those nourishing, safe herbs that can be used anytime by anyone of any age. In fact, it's really good for children because in addition to being a nervine tonic that's soothing, calming, helping you deal with stress and anxiety in a calming, positive way. It's also used traditionally to help you focus. So a lot of kids who have ADD and ADHD, and adults too, they really enjoy using lemon balm because they say it gets rid of all that external stimuli, all the fluttery stuff around their minds, so that they can zero in on something and concentrate. Very useful plant, lovely lemony flavor. I really suggest people make a tea with that and just experiment. See how you like it. See if you want to add mint to it. You can add a few lemon balm leaves anytime you're making any sort of tea.
Now, I just want to ask you, with essential oils, Melissa is also an oil used to help with grief. Is that true with the tea?
Yeah, I find it is. I like to use lemon balm, and I like to use rose petal for grief. People who are experiencing sadness or loss, they really connect with lemon balm and rose petal, either one or mixed together. But those are wonderful healing herbs for those emotions of sadness and grief. The essential oil, like you mentioned, by itself, but also the tea. It's a wonderful way to use it.
Yeah, that's great information.
So I mentioned extracts. Herbal medicine is interesting in that it's basically all about extracts. It's all about how you can get the goods that are in the plant chemically into your own body. So when you're extracting, you can do it in water, which gives you a tea, which is very safe and hydrating and nourishing. You can also do it into oil, say olive oil, and that would be something that you could eat, like as a salad dressing, or you could put on your skin for moisturizing. So another herb that I like to use a lot is sage. Sage is common garden sage. We've all had it on turkey or chicken or whatever, but it's a very medicinal plant that is actually very sacred in many cultures and is used spiritually as a cleansing herb. It's also very astringent. Its medicinal qualities include astringency, which makes it lovely topically. So when you add it to something like oil or witch hazel extract, which is very astringent, then you suddenly have a first aid remedy, and you can put it on any sort of cut or wound or scrape, and it will kill germs, and it will keep infection at bay. So here's a very simple recipe. You can harvest a big handful of sage leaves and chop them up, and put them in a small mason jar, a glass jar, and cover them completely with oil. And you can use any sort of oil, safflower or sunflower, almond, canola, olive, and cover it with a lid and label it so that you remember what it is in 2 weeks, because you're going to leave it on a shelf in the dark or in a pantry for a couple of weeks, after which you'll strain out the leaves, and what you'll have left in the oil is what is called a menstruum. And the menstruum is the liquid that's left over. This is your medicine. So this could be, you can mix it with vinegar and make a salad dressing, and you have this very pungent, spicy, sage-flavored salad dressing.
Mm.
Or you can have the oil by itself to pour into the bathtub, or to use as a massage oil, or to use as a first aid oil. And then, to take it a step further, you can take that same oil that you've strained the leaves out. Say you have a cup of oil and you want to use something thick, like olive oil or canola. To that cup of oil, you put it in a pan and you bring it on low heat on the stove. To that, you add a quarter cup chopped beeswax. And you add that into the pan. You stir it around with a spoon until it all melts. And then you pour it in a jar. And in about 20 minutes, that'll solidify with the beeswax in it. But it's not solid. It's nice and creamy, and you've created a beeswax ointment. And it's a lot of fun. It's very easy for kids to make, great for teenagers to make. You can use any herb. It doesn't have to be sage. It could be comfrey, thyme, oregano, St. John's wort, rosemary, elderflower, elder leaf, lemon balm again, so many different herbs, yarrow, plantain. You know, any of these, you can combine them or you can do just one at a time, and it will create a really healing salve or ointment.
So let me ask you a question, Holly. If people don't have fresh sage, I mean, I'm in an apartment on the 19th floor. I don't have fresh sage. Can you use dried sage? Can you order it from places like your apothecary and do the same thing with the dried sage?
You can order it. So for teas, actually, you do want to order or use dried herbs. They work the best. For oils, you really want to try fresh. The dried herbs just don't work as well. For witch hazel, if you wanted to make what's called a liniment and do the same sort of thing for wounds externally, either fresh or dried.
Okay. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Sage also has a benefit for hot flashes, doesn't it?
Yeah. A lot of people use it for menopausal symptoms such as hot flashes. It's very cooling. That astringent quality comes through in that way. It's cooling. It's calming. You can combine it for hot flashes with black cohosh and wild yam and vitex. Really nice as in a blend for menopause.
Oh, good. Any other herbs that you recommend to help women going through menopause or PMS that are favorites of yours?
Well, the vitex is one. It's called chasteberry berry. And I'm looking out my window right now at my little vitex tree. It's a small tree or a large shrub, and it has beautiful purple flowers on it. And when the flowers go to seed, those are the medicinal part, the seeds. It's called monk's pepper because they look like little tiny peppercorns. And chasteberry berry is generally used to help balance women's hormones. It's called a pituitary normalizer. So people think that the way it works is it actually balances the hormones being produced by the pituitary, because you have the HP axes, the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal, hypothalamus pituitary ovary, hypothalamus pituitary thyroid. So these herbs that address the pituitary really get at the core of hormonal imbalances. So, for instance, a woman whose period comes after 9 days, 1 month, but the next month it comes after 21 days, and the month after that it comes after 30, and it's not very regular. Chasteberry berry is used to help regulate that cycle, and that helps obviously with fertility if she's trying to get pregnant. So many issues, you know, it helps with PMS and emotional swings, and it can help to a degree with menopausal women whose estrogen and progesterone is plummeting.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I heard that was a wonderful herb to be using as well. So good. So what are some of your other favorites? This is great. I really appreciate sharing some of these practical applications of herbs, because I think we really want to be incorporating them in our life and be drinking them as teas and applying them as tinctures or whatever. And I love it. It's just something about the connection with the earth that really connects with women. We love mm-hmm. this communication with the herbs, using them, receiving their healing gifts. It just resonates with the feminine energy.
It's such a great connection. Such a great connection to have with the natural world and to have with other women. You know, it's fun to get together with women and make these things for yourself or for others as gifts. Or my daughter is 12, and she's grown up with me making all these things. And so whenever she has a party and has all of her girlfriends over, they make spritzers with essential oils and witch hazel and water, and they smell so incredible, and they get to experiment with different fragrances, and it's a way for them to kind of up their energy, but also do it as a group of friends. And it's such a sisterhood kind of experience, you know.
Yes, I really understand that.
Yeah.
How about some other teas? What helps keeps out? Well, let's talk about the stinging nettle. You started talking about that. Let's get into the stinging nettle.
And you know, I'll email you a variety of recipes from my book. I have a whole chapter in the Women Healers book about handcrafting and recipes. So I'll email you some with a couple of pictures that maybe you could post on your website or Facebook.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, great
and
idea.
Share with folks. So stinging nettle is fantastic. If you brush up against it in your garden or in the wild, it will sting because the stalks are actually covered with tiny little hairs, and each hair has a follicle at the beginning of it that is filled with formic acid and histamine. And formic acid is the same sort of acid that's in fire ants or red ants. It's what makes, when an ant bites you, it's what makes it hurt. And it's the same chemical in the stinging nettle plant. And so when you brush up against it, it gives you a rash and it stings and it's very itchy, but it goes away after a short time. So you wouldn't think that it was a very useful plant. And I don't know who experimented with this or who listened to the nettle a long time ago and figured out that it's actually extremely mineral rich and delicious and good for us. So there are two ways to use it to make it edible and palatable. One is to cook it. And you can cook the fresh young leaves in water or steam them and eat it as a green, like with salt and pepper and vinegar. And that cooking process negates the formic acid and the histamine, so it's safe. It no longer stings. The other way is to dry it on a screen or on newsprint, the way I mentioned a minute ago. And that also negates those chemicals. And so then you're left with this incredibly nourishing plant that you can eat as a food, or you can dunk in water, which is my favorite way to do it, is I take a big pot of water on my stove and I take either dried nettle that you can get at a health food store or at a large market that has a lot of herbs, or you can dry it yourself. And you fill the pot with the leaves, not necessarily the stems, although they won't hurt, but definitely the leaves, they're big. They can get as big as your hand with your fingers outstretched. And then you bring the water to a boil, and once it's at a boil, you turn it off and you put the lid on and you let it sit overnight, at least for 4 hours. But overnight is even better. So that in the morning when you open the lid, you have this, it's incredibly rich and fragrant and dark, dark green because it's full of chlorophyll, and it's very thick actually too. And you strain out the leaves and save them. Don't get rid of them. I'll give you a recipe for how to use those leaves. But the liquid that's left in your pot is your tea, and you can drink it as is, or you can put it in the fridge and make an iced tea, or you can heat it up and put it in a thermos so that all day long you have this nourishing hot tea to drink. It's really, really good. It has a very earthy, mellow, green flavor.
And what is it? Yeah, I was going to ask you, what are the particular healing gifts of nettle?
Iron, potassium, phosphorus, calcium, magnesium. Mm. It's really rich in all the core macronutrients. Really a stupendous herb for bone strength, hair, skin, nails, blood vessel strength. It's It's just a core nutrient. You know, it's what you take instead of taking your multivitamins because it has it all. So you've strained out your leaves, and what I like to do is I put them in a blender with a little bit of cream cheese, salt and pepper, some chives or parsley, and I make a dip. And then you can dip your carrots or your bell pepper strips or crackers right into this incredibly nutrient-rich, light green dip. It's delicious.
Wow, that sounds fantastic. So those leaves are used to make the tea, and then they have another use, and you can put them in with a dip or whatever you want to experiment with.
Yep, double use.
Yeah,
and then,
great.
And if you decide not to make a dip, you can definitely compost them and help turn them into soil. A lot of people actually will make a tea outside in a big bucket with fresh nettle leaves, if they have a lot of them, and let it ferment, and it becomes a garden compost aid for plants, very nourishing and nutrient-rich.
What about a compress? Can you use it topically?
You know, I have spoken with a few herbalists who have. It's not one of my favorite compress herbs. I just love it so much as a tea and to eat it and drink it. My favorite compress herbs really for inflammation and pain of the joints or muscles are yarrow and ginger and rosemary.
Oh, rosemary too, huh? You take all those little rosemary leaves.
The little leaves, then, strip them off the stalk, yep.
Yeah.
I usually get a shallow pan with water and simmer the herbs in the pan. And then, for 20 minutes or so, 30 minutes, say you're at a campsite and somebody's gotten injured, you can use pine needles, you can use St. John's wort, calendula, a lot of different herbs that are anti-inflammatory and soothing or analgesic for wounds like that. Simmer these herbs in a pan, and then you don't even have to strain it. You can just dip a cloth into the pan for the water and wring it just a little bit and apply that to the skin. That's your compress. Alternatively, you can scoop out the herbs that have been simmering and apply the herbs directly to the skin, and that's called a poultice.
Right.
Great ways to ease pain in muscles and joints for arthritis and rheumatism and feelings of numbness. Really nice external topical method.
Can you tell us about oat straw? Because that also is another healing plant.
Yeah, oat straw is Avena sativa. It's a little wild flower or cultivated flower that is very high in calcium, especially. A lot of people mix it with nettle or use it in much the same way you use nettle. Oat straw is often used for bone growth, hair, skin, and nails again, but combined with horsetail for silica, for people who have broken bones or brittle bones or osteoporosis. Oat straw is also a nerving tonic, very soothing. So people who are highly stressed or they've been through a traumatic situation, oat straw makes a lovely tea, a very nourishing tea to be drunk every day to help people rebuild their strength and their courage from the inside out.
Wow.
It also makes a great external lotion. You can make a tea with the oats and then strain out the solids and apply the lotion. It's kind of a watery liquid to your skin or your face. Makes a really nice like a face lotion with a cotton ball that you can then rinse off.
Well, that sounds like a wonderful herb to have in your pantry.
It is. Such a nice one. They're all so... Well, I don't want to say they're all nice because they're not. There's such a variety, which is part of the beauty of it. You know, you have these powerful, wonderful plants that can gift us in so many different ways. Some of it's soothing and appealing and lovely, and some of it's strong and bitter and stimulant, but they all have their uses, and they're all such a gift. It's so wonderful to get to know them and learn how to incorporate them in our lives.
Absolutely. And so I was going to ask you, what's your favorite herb for stress?
Well, I guess it depends on the season and what I'm going through personally. All this past summer, it was nettles. I just drank nettles like they were going out of style. I had nettles all the time. And now that we're entering fall, I'm finding myself drinking a lot more ashwagandha, which is an Indian herb. And I use it as a powder, actually. So I'm putting it in my oatmeal. I'm putting it in smoothies and really enjoying feeling the ashwagandha.
So when you are choosing ashwagandha, is that because your body is asking for it? Do you feel like your energies are changing, or is it because you have the, you know, that level of knowledge and know that it's time to boost your immune system and give some strength? How does that work?
No,
you know,
it's I really try to cultivate my intuition. I'm definitely not the world's most intuitive person, but I do like to challenge myself to be more in tune with what's happening around me and in me, and really listening. I really like to ask, what do I need today? And let the answers come. It's not a very scientific approach. It's much more of a open to the universe, intuitive approach. And, you know, sometimes what comes is really what you need. It's and in this case, it's been the ashwagandha. Last year, about this time, it was calendula. I was growing a lot of calendula, and those bright little flowers were just calling to me. So I was I was eating the flowers because they're an edible petal, and I was putting them in my teas just a little bit because they're a little bit bitter. But I really encourage people to listen to that inner voice. You know, we can all be a little bit more intuitive than we are and be in tune. There was a time when I was in my early 20s when I was so in tune. I was out hiking all the time. I was camping outdoors. I was completely in love with nature and really availing myself of everything it had to offer. And I got so in tune that that I could tell when the phone was about to ring, and I could tell who it was going to be.
Right.
And then I'd answer the phone, and sure enough, you know, it was exactly who I thought. And I've lost a lot of that. I think we all do as we get busy and we're working and we're chauffeuring our kids around or we're driving to meetings. But being able to pluck a few minutes out of every day to really listen and tune in to the universe and to the trees and, you know, let yourself hear what's out there and what's in you is such an important gift, and it's such a good thing to cultivate. It only takes a little bit of time.
You know, I'm just thinking as you're talking, there's a little planter that I've seen on the internet you can buy, and you can plant all your little herbs. Because I live in a little apartment, I don't have a lot of room here, but with this little planter, you can, it kind of has levels, and you can just sit it on your counter, and you can have a variety of herbs growing in there, and it just reminded me of it. I should really go and order it and have a little herb garden in my little unit here, because we can just then pluck out the things we need and have that nature surrounding us, calling to us.
Yeah, and so many plants are so good for that. You know, violet grows really well like that. It likes to be really watered well, so you might put that on the bottom. Lemon balm and sage, rosemary, they like to be a little bit drier. Maybe they could go up top.
Hmm.
Calendula grows really well like that. So they could all be sticking out the sides of the planter in their various levels, and you could have a little garden.
Wow, how fun. So, Holly, this has been such a delight, and I thank you for your time. I thank you for the 7 years you've put into creating your new book, Women Healers of the World, The Traditions, History, and Geography of Herbal Medicine. And we need to let people know that if they are wanting to purchase some herbs, they should visit your website, which is vineyardherbs.com. I'm sure you have lots of great herbs that they can learn about and explore, and if they want to order some to try making their own little tinctures or healing concoctions, you've got it all right there, right?
I do. I don't sell the herbs by themselves, like in bulk, but I sell my own blends that I've been working on for years and years. Tincture blends and tea blends that are really delicious and help with a variety of things. So, yeah, they're all on my website, vineyardherbs.com.
Well, this has been such a delightful conversation. Again, congratulations on your book, and thank you for your healing wisdom and inspiration today, Holly.
Thank you for having me, Cheryl. I enjoyed it.
It's been a pleasure. And to all of you listening, thank you. We've been having this great conversation with herbalist Holly Bilobono. And remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. And bye for now.